up, half bent over, crouched next to the patrolman. He was a short, thick man with sandy hair, a brush mustache, and round, gold-rimmed glasses.
Are we talking to him?
We're yelling at him, but we're afraid to make a move any closer, the patrolman said. Says he'll kill the girl if we do. We're talking about having Phil take him out. The sheriff looked back three cars where the shooter was sitting behind a patrol car, looking at the fugitive car through a scope.
If we have to.
I'd really like to talk to this guy. He could probably give us all the rest of them, Lucas said. The sheriff looked at him and asked, Who are you? Lucas gave him the 5-second version and explained the phone connection with Sky, and the sheriff said, Phil could probably actually shoot him in the shoulder of his gun arm. I mean, shooting normally, Phil could put 3 shots through a dime at that range. With the window, it's more of a problem. But if he could take that shoulder out, we could rush him. The phone beeped, then beeped again, and Lucas said, If there's a problem, beep me again.
Beep.
Then the man's voice again.
Say goodbye, bitch, 'cause you're going first. They're gonna shoot me, but I don't give a shit no more. I don't give a shit no more.
The man sounded frantic, whipping himself up for it. The deputy with the binoculars said, his voice calm enough, He's turning around in the seat. He's kneeling on the seat, looking toward the back, and the sheriff scrambled away toward the car where the rifleman was set up. From where Lucas was sitting with the phone, he couldn't see the shooter, but the patrolman could, and Lucas called, Is he? Bam! 7. Lucas saw the sheriff bolt toward the target car, pistol in his hand, and Lucas followed, well back. The sheriff stumbled through the beans and almost went down, and Lucas worried that he'd shoot himself or somebody else, but he didn't, and a few seconds later, they were looking through the side window at a dead guy in the front seat of the car. The rifle round had struck him in the cheekbone and gone through his head, knocking him back into the front seat. Lucas said, The girl's in the back, and a deputy arriving at that moment yanked on the back hatch, but it was locked, and the sheriff pulled open the driver's side door and reached across the dead man's legs to pull the keys out of the ignition, and they all went around to the back of the car and unlocked the hatch. They could see the unmoving body in the back, covered with a green woolen blanket. Lucas pulled it off, and Sky was looking up at him, eyes wide with fear. Lucas said, Sky, you're okay. The sheriff said, Don't let her see that, and tipped his head toward the front of the car, and, Tom, get that tape off her. A deputy produced a switchblade and began cutting the tape off Sky's legs, and she said, They were gonna kill me. Last night, Pilot told Boney to give me some water, but he wouldn't have to bother with feeding me. They were gonna kill me today.
Gonna get you to the hospital, honey. The sheriff said, You gotta be pretty shook up.
To Lucas, he said,
We called in an ambulance. They're on the way. Oughta be here.
The deputy finished taking off the tape that bound her arms to her body, and Sky tried to get out of the car, but when she put her feet down, nearly collapsed. Lucas caught her under the arms and pushed her back until she was sitting on the edge of the trunk. He said, Letty told me that you were a witness to a killing last night.
Who's Letty?
The sheriff asked. Lucas gave him another 5-second explanation, and then Sky said,
I heard it all, and saw the end of it. I was taped up in the back bedroom, and the doors on that thing were about as thick as tinfoil. Pilot got connected to some dope dealer here and was going to buy some cocaine from him, but when the dope dealer got here, Pilot didn't have the money. He was trying to buy on credit.
On credit? The sheriff said.
Dope? That's what he tried. And the guy tried to get out. I guess he had a gun. Pilot said something about him having a gun, but then there was a fight, and this guy came crashing through the bedroom door, and there was blood gushing out of his neck like they cut his throat or something. And Pilot told Kristen. Kristen got cut bad. They talked about that. They took her to a hospital. I think in St. Paul last night. Anyway, Pilot said that the RV wouldn't be safe anymore because there was no way they could clean up all the blood. I mean, there was blood everywhere. You wouldn't believe it. so he decided to burn it.
She told the story, sitting on the edge of the car, of how she got the phone and how she called Letty and how they took her off the street in Duluth. Then she turned her eyes up to Lucas and said,
"I think they might have killed Henry. Have you heard?"
Lucas shook his head. Henry didn't make it. She'd been stressed and talking fast, but showing no tears, until Lucas told her that Henry hadn't made it, and then she suddenly began leaking tears and flopped backwards into the trunk space, sobbing. The sheriff pulled on Lucas's sleeve, and Lucas stepped back, and the sheriff whispered,
"We gotta talk. Who in the heck is Henry?"
"Her companion. They killed him in South Dakota. Let's get her on the way to the hospital, and I'll fill you in." The ambulance arrived, and though Skye said she wasn't hurt, Lucas put her in the ambulance and told her, "Just ride along with this. You don't have to be bleeding to be hurt." She no longer had her pack. She thought it might have burned in the SUV, but her walking staff was in the back seat of the car in the bean field.
"If I could get that, I've had it a long time."
"I'll see to it," Lucas said. "They'll probably want to take fingerprints off it, in case one of the other people handled it, so it could be a while."
"Okay. Call Letty," Skye said. "Tell her what happened. She saved my life."
"I will," Lucas said. The ambulance left for the hospital in Menominee, and Lucas stepped away from the deputies and the post-shooting bureaucracy and called Letty. Letty answered halfway through the first ring, and Lucas said, "We got her. The guy she was with was killed." He told her what had happened, and Letty said,
"I'm coming to the hospital."
"Not a bad idea. You might be her only friend. Take your mom's car."
"Mom's not here."
"Letty,
I'm coming," she said.
She hung up, and Lucas looked at the phone and said, "Ah, shit. She'd be coming all right. In his Porsche. She had a right foot like a ship's anchor." Lucas gave the sheriff everything he knew, from the murder in Los Angeles to the crucifixion in South Dakota, to the murder of Malin the night before, the search of Malin's apartment, and the phone call to Letty. The sheriff stuck a wad of Copenhagen under his tongue as he listened, chewed, spit once, and then said,
"Those sons of bitches come to this county, they won't be walking away."
"I don't think they're looking to walk away," Lucas said. "They're like a tornado. They don't think about too much at all. They just kill and move on."
"So we're shifting this basically over to the DCI? To Stern?"
"I guess. Nobody knows exactly where these people are or what their cars look like. Probably get Skye to do some identikits." Another car came rolling fast from the south, grill lights flashing, and the sheriff said,
"That's probably Stern now."
It was. Stern looked at the body in the car and said,
"One down. Would have liked to have talked to him." "I made the call," the sheriff said, spitting again. "We thought he was about to shoot the girl."
Stern slapped him on the shoulder and said, "I'm not criticizing, Jim. We all would have done the same thing." He turned to Lucas. "Did the girl give us anything useful?" "One thing. There were two people present at the murder last night, this pilot guy and one of the women named Kristen. Skye said she got cut pretty bad and was treated at an emergency room, probably in the Twin Cities. We should get some video of her."
"We need that right now," Stern said.
"I'll call on my way down to Menominee," Lucas said. "About Skye, you guys are going to want to ring her out, but when you're done, she's sort of a friend of my daughter. If you want, I'll put her in a hotel in St. Paul and we'll keep an eye on her."
"Probably as good as it's gonna get if she doesn't have an address," Stern said. "Appreciate the offer."
Before Lucas left, he took the highway patrolman aside and asked, "Are you guys running any speed traps down on I-94?
"Just curious?"
"Well, my daughter's coming over. She's a friend of Skye's.
She's probably upset and driving too fast because she's kind of freaked out. If I could slow her down a bit. The patrolman checked and found a trap near exit 10 at Roberts, Wisconsin, not far from the Minnesota line. Lucas called Letty from his truck. Where are you?
I-94.
But not in Wisconsin yet, Lucas said.
Not yet, not quite.
The Wisconsin Highway Patrol is running a trap near exit 10. That's 10 miles on the other side of the river. Watch the mile signs.
Got it. I'm driving slow. I tell you, though, a 7-speed manual seems a little overcooked for this bitch. You can keep it in 5th and still blow the doors off anything else on the road.
Letty, goddammit.
Just honking your horn, Dad. I'll see you in Menominee.
Lucas had just gotten in the Benz when he saw Stern jogging toward him. He rolled down the window and Stern came up and said,
he had a cell phone. We looked at the recents and he had a call just a minute or so before he got off the highway. That had to be somebody else in the caravan who spotted the roadblock being set up.
Had to be, Lucas said.
I'll get the numbers down to Madison and we'll start pinging them, Stern said. We ought to have a location pretty quick.
Lucas was almost as far from the hospital as Letty was, the difference being that she was driving a Porsche on an interstate highway and he was driving an SUV on back roads. On the way down, he called the BCA duty officer and told him about the woman who'd been treated for knife cuts and asked him to check the local hospitals. Sometime right before or after midnight, probably, he said.
We'll get it going.
Lucas was not surprised when he pulled into the hospital parking lot and saw his Porsche already there. When he walked past it, he could hear the ticking as the engine cooled. Inside the emergency room, Skye was sitting on a bed talking to Letty, who was sitting in a visitor's chair. A nurse called to Lucas.
Are you a relative?
I'm a cop, he said. She nodded, and he got a chair from an empty bay and put it next to Letty's. He asked Skye, you okay? I mean, more or less.
Yeah, they gave me some dope. Said it would help relieve my anxiety, which is good, because I'm pretty anxious. How did Henry die?
Stabbed, I think, Lucas lied. I haven't seen the autopsy report. They're doing that in South Dakota. I'm sorry. I know you guys, Skye said.
Yeah,
and his folks still live in Johnson City, Texas, if that makes any difference to anyone. Somebody will contact them, probably already have, Lucas said.
He was a good guy, Skye said. Good traveler. I think the dope is taking the edge off, but I'm awful sad.
Proves you're a human being, Letty said. Lucas said, some Wisconsin cops are going to talk to you. Stern and the sheriff's chief investigator arrived together 20 minutes later. They interviewed Skye for an hour, with Lucas and Letty chiming in from time to time. Pilate and his disciples had taunted her, talking about playing with her, which she understood to mean rape and murder. She'd not been raped because the disciples had been too busy. If the dope dealer from Chippewa Falls hadn't shown up, she said, she'd already be dead, but his murder had sidetracked Pilate's plans. Skye only had first names for Pilate's crew, and not all of those. She thought they might be on the way to a county fair somewhere, and then on to a juggalo gathering at a farm in northeast Wisconsin. Lucas volunteered a BCA artist to create portraits of Pilate, Kristen, and the others, and Stern accepted the offer. When they were done talking, a social worker and a doctor took Skye for a private interview. While she was being interviewed, Stern got on the phone with the sheriff at the shooting scene and to California. He came back with a notebook and said,
the dead guy's name was Arnati Roscoe, which must be short for some longer Russian name, but that's the name on his driver's license. He's done time twice in California, both times for burglary.
The L.A. cops said he was in the commercial burglary business for years, probably knocked over a couple hundred places, mostly houses on the west side of Los Angeles and Malibu and Santa Barbara. There's quite a bit on him. They'll run down his known contacts for us because of that Kitty Place murder. They're hoping we'll clear it for them.
If we can get our hands on Pilot, we will, Lucas said. That murder out in South Dakota was like a fingerprint.
Sky was released a few minutes later and came out clutching an amber bottle with 30 blue pills. Lucas had already suggested that they put Sky back in the Holiday Inn, and Letty said she might see if she could get an adjoining room just for the night. And we need to get you some clothes.
I need everything, Sky said. They just dumped all my stuff.
Macy's, and then over to REI, Letty said.
Don't need the Macy's, Sky said. REI is good enough.
Get what you need. You'll have lots of room in the bins, Lucas said. He held out his hand to Letty. The keys. In the bins, Letty asked Sky,
How are you, really?
Screwed up, Sky said.
I was bouncing around in that car like a loose tire. Everything hurts. They gave me some pretty good dope, though. If I didn't have it, they'd probably have to put me in a rubber room somewhere. Poor Henry. Poor, poor Henry. I hope he didn't suffer.
Letty said. He was too young to die. When Letty had determined that Sky was functioning, she took her straight out of Wisconsin to an REI store in Roseville, a suburb of St. Paul. Go ahead and get whatever you need, Letty said. Dad gave me an American Express. I don't even think he looks at the bills. Besides, he already said it was all right. Sky got underwear and shirts and cargo pants and 6 pairs of pumpkin orange socks and, at Letty's urging, a new pair of boots, a decent pack, a top-end 3-season sleeping bag, heavy long johns, and a variety of cooking and eating gear. A compact stove, fuel bottle, camping silverware, a lightweight parka, and gloves.
I'll be down south before I need them, but it can get pretty frosty even way down south, in Mississippi and Texas.
And?
I need a knife.
Well, let's find a good one, Letty said. They settled on a Gerber survival knife with a 5-inch blade for $60. When they left the store, Sky said,
I owe you. This isn't just a donation. I owe you.
I'm okay with that, Letty said. You can owe us. Someday you'll do good and you can pay us back. I'll get you some cash. You're going to need to eat until everything is done with. Letty got 2 rooms with a connecting door at the Holiday Inn, and they wound up staying 2 nights. Sky was an interesting talker and an interested listener, and got Letty talking about her younger days as a trapper and a shooter of crooked cops and cartel killers.
I'd never shoot anyone if it wasn't self-defense, but that's what it was, Letty said.
I sometimes think I might have a touch of the sociopath, or more than a touch, because none of it ever made me feel the least bit bad.
But if you were a sociopath, wouldn't that mean when those cartel killers came after the family, you would have taken care of yourself first? Instead, you got between them, the Mexicans and your family.
Letty smiled. I never thought of it that way. Thank you. I guess I'm not a sociopath. And I'd kind of started to worry about it.
I don't know how killing somebody would make me feel, but I guess I might feel bad after a while, Sky said. I can see how if it was kill or be killed, I'd rather be the one who stays alive, but I believe I'd lose a lot of sleep over it.
Then you're a nicer person than I am, Letty said. I never missed a minute's sleep. The next morning, Letty drove Sky to Lucas's office. Lucas had just gotten copies of a video taken at Regent's Hospital.
He'd looked at it once and had been about to call the support services to cut some frames out of it when Letty and Skye walked in. "Is this the woman you call Kristen?" Lucas asked Skye, putting the video back up on his computer. Skye crouched over the screen, watching, then said,
"Yes, that's her, for sure."
"The video's not so good."
"I don't care. That's her. You can't see it, but she's got these pointy teeth. She filed them down herself."
"All right. I'll have the best stills printed out, and you can talk to our artist, help him make some pictures of the other people." To Letty, he said, "This will take a while."
"I don't care. I want to watch."
Skye did 4 identikits of Pilot, Bell, Raleigh, and a woman named Ellen. While she did that, Lucas had gone to check on his other cases. Jenkins and Shrake were at Ben Marion's cabin at Cross Lake and told him that there'd been no problem finding places in the woods that looked dug up, but
"There are about 1 million of them. We saw a squirrel actually making one of them, bearing acorns, and there are squirrels all over the place. The idea was good, but the execution is impossible."
"So you're coming back?"
"Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow, I guess. Go back to looking for computer chips."
Dell had not yet found the guy with the safe full of diamonds. He called Stern, who said,
"We got something weird on that Roscoe's phone. That bony guy."
"Weird's usually not good," Lucas said.
"Not good in this case," Stern said. "We pinged them all, and the only returns we've gotten so far are from California. On the most recent calls, we got nothing at all. Our guy here says they may be pulling the batteries on their phones."
"That doesn't help," Lucas said. "They'll use them sooner or later, though. Keep pinging them." When he came back to Letty and Skye, he checked out the identikits and said, "Not bad. We could get something from these." "I'll send them over to Stern. He said he'd plaster northern Wisconsin with them, get them in all the papers up there."
"Are you sure they're up there?" Skye asked.
"We're not sure of anything, but that's where they were headed. By now, they could be in New Orleans."
After a fast lunch, Lucas, Letty, and Skye went over to Swede Hollow Park to look for other travelers. They found 3 sitting together, passing a joint, and Skye told them about Henry. One of the 3 knew him, and asked about Pilot. None of them knew him or had heard about him. Skye caught up on gossip, then Lucas went back to work, and Letty and Skye drifted off, caught a movie at the Mall of America, bought a burner phone for Skye with 25 hours of talk time, bought a hat for Letty, ate again, and went back to the Holiday Inn. Letty broke out her laptop to check her Facebook for news from her friends and punched in Pilot and got nothing but the wrong one. Skye always carried 1 big fat paperback novel with her, and she'd spent some of the money Letty gave her on a Diana Gabaldon Outlander novel. In between spates of talk, she'd read the book, and she was reading it when Letty took a bathroom break. During the day, nobody had wanted to talk to Skye about Henry, and she'd begun to feel that something was being hidden from her. When Letty went into the bathroom, she put the book down, stepped over to Letty's laptop, which was showing the Google page, and typed Henry Mark Fuller into the search field. The front page of the Rapid City Journal's blog page popped up with the headline, "Murdered Man Was Crucified," and beneath that, a bad picture of Henry taken from his high school yearbook. With increasing horror, she read through the news story based on the autopsy done by a South Dakota medical examiner. Henry had been crucified, castrated, and slashed nearly to pieces. She barely heard the toilet flush and the bathroom door open, and then Letty, behind her, blurt, "Oh, shit." Skye turned around, tears streaming down her face.
"You didn't tell me."
"You were already screwed up. You didn't need to know the details," Letty said.
"I needed to know," Skye said. "Could you, I want to read everything I can find, but I don't want you here to watch me. I'm going to cry a lot. Could you go out and get some Cokes or something? I won't be real long.
Sure. Half an hour?
That should be enough. I want to see what all the papers say.
When Letty was gone, Sky went to Craigslist and dropped an ad. Going to Juggalo Gathering near Hayward? I need ride. Will pay $50. She listed the number for the burner phone, then dropped back to Google and typed in Henry's name again. All the daily papers in South Dakota had the story, and a couple across the border in Wyoming and down in Nebraska. They were all the same, reprints of an AP story based on the Rapid City Journal's initial report. She read them all anyway. When Letty got back, Sky gestured at the laptop and said,
"Nobody cares. They wrote one story and everybody copied it, and that's the last we'll hear about Henry Mark Fuller. Because nobody gives a shit about people like him. Like us."
"That's not true," Letty said. "A lot of people give a shit, which is how you got pulled out of the back of that car."
Sky dropped onto one of the beds and cried.
"Ah, jeez."
They talked off and on until midnight, and then Sky went off to her room and flopped on the bed and failed to sleep. Letty managed to sleep after 2 o'clock. Sky got a phone call at 7, a male voice.
"This is Juggalo Central. Two of us going today. We've got 2 seats.
She arranged to get picked up at 9 at Mears Park, said she'd buy both seats. Got them for $35 each, but she wanted to take a pack.
"We got that much room."
Sky slipped out and ran to Swede Hollow, where she found some friends, including a reliable guy named Carl. When she asked if he wanted to go to the Juggalo Gathering, he said,
"I was thinking I might."
"I've got 2 seats, Sky said. "I got a motel room you can take a shower so you don't smell too much."
Carl said sure, and they hurried back to the motel. Carl showered with the motel's perfumed soap, put on his cleanest clothes, and at 8:15 they were gone. Sky left a note for Letty that said,
"Thanks for everything. I will pay you back someday. You're a good friend, but I just can't handle this. I gotta travel on."
Letty found the note when she walked through the connecting door at 9 o'clock as Sky and Carl loaded into the ride. Carl said,
"This is gonna be great, huh? Jug-a-lo, know what I'm saying?"
Letty ran down to the bends and headed to Swede Hollow. She spotted a guy they'd talked to the day before sitting on a sleeping bag playing a recorder and hurried over.
"I'm looking for Sky. Has she been by?"
"She's gone," the guy said. "She came down and got Carl, said she had a ride waiting. Don't know where they were going, but they were in a hurry."
"God damn it."
Letty walked back to her car, sat and called Lucas and told him that Sky had taken off. Lucas said, "How'd she arrange a ride?"
"Well, I don't know. Maybe she knew somebody."
"I thought you were with her."
"I was, until midnight. She found an online newspaper article about the autopsy on Henry and kind of freaked out. Anyway, she's gone."
"Damn it, we need her here," Lucas said. "If you're down there anyway, ask around. Maybe somebody else knows where she went."
"All right. Be careful."
Letty got 50 feet back into the park when a thought struck her, and she turned, went back to the car, turned on her laptop, and called up the browsing history. The link was right at the top, Craigslist. She drove 5 minutes to a Caribou Coffee, got online, went to Craigslist and to Rideshare, and found Sky's advertisement from the night before. She called Lucas back.
"I know where she went."
She told him how she found out, and he said, "Good. Stern will be up there, or at least have some guys up there, and they know what she looks like. I'll get them to track her down."
"They won't recognize her if she goes as a Juggalo," Letty said. I've been doing some research on them. They wear costumes and clown faces. It's hard to recognize anybody.
Well, we gotta look, Lucas said. We really need her back.
That's your last word? We really need her back?
Well, what the heck am I supposed to say? Lucas asked. We do need her back, and we'll find her.
Letty was fuming when she got off the phone. Lucas had gone bureaucratic on her, and Skye was headed for serious trouble. She didn't want to do it. She knew Lucas would go ballistic, but she pulled out and headed for I-35. The Juggalo gathering was 2.5 hours away. 8. Pilot and his crew freaked when they learned what had happened to Boney and that the cops had gotten Skye back. Chet found out at a convenience store where a television was tuned to a Duluth station. The shooting and rescue were big news. He drove back to the new campground at 80 miles an hour, about all he could get out of the aging Corolla, to tell the others. Pilot was gone when he got there. The rest of the crew said that he and Kristen had gone to Cruz's used RV lots, planning to trade a half kilo of lightly cut cocaine for an RV, if they could find the right guy. The crew stood around, remembering Boney and some of the stunts he'd pulled, like the time he screwed this lady teacher and then told her that he was a student at her school. He looked young enough, and blackmailed her into what he called stupid teacher tricks, and he did mean tricks. The new campground was 15 miles east of Hayward, Wisconsin, and mostly empty, except for a carnival crew setting up a tilt-a-whirl in one corner of the open field, getting ready for the Juggalo gathering that would start the next day. They were still standing in a semicircle, talking about Boney, when Pilot and Kristen pulled in, Pilot driving what turned out to be another Winnebago Mini. This one, a 1999 model with 86,000 miles on it, but otherwise, cherry. He got out grinning, picked up on the vibe, and the grin drained away. What?
The cops shot Boney. He's dead, Lane said. Chet saw it on the TV.
What?
Dude, they shot him. It's on TV, Chet said. The cops got that chick back, and she's gonna tell them everything.
He was my main man, Pilot wailed, spittle flying around the semicircle of disciples.
They gunned him down?
Pilot, Raleigh, and Richie Hope piled into Chet's car, and they went back to the gas station where the story never did show up again. They waited so long that the guy behind the counter finally asked them what they were watching for, and Pilot told him that they thought they might have known the girl rescued by the cops, who was a Juggalo. The counterman pulled an iPad out from behind the cigarette rack, called up the TV station's website, and let them look at the cached news story. The reporter had heard from a sheriff's deputy that the kidnapping victim had managed to conceal and turn on a cell phone, which the authorities had then tracked to the ambush point. The victim had told them that her kidnappers had been responsible for murdering a Chippewa Falls man who'd been found dead in a burning RV.
You know what this fucking means? Pilot asked, back in the car again. That bitch is gonna tell them what we look like. They're gonna make those drawings of us and plaster them all over the fucking state.
We gotta get out of here, said Richie. Like, way gone.
We gotta do something,
Pilot said, toying with one of his beard braids.
But they don't know we're at the gathering. We put on some clown makeup, nobody'll recognize us, and we'll be good for a while.
Move the rest of that cocaine, and we'll have the bucks to get on up to the Michigan gathering. That's a long way from here. Put on the clown faces again, and by the time that's over, nobody'll remember us.
I don't know. I think they'll remember, at least around here, Chet said.
If I could get my hands on that bitch Skye, I'd skin her alive, Pilot said. And?
Who's got the Cheetos? Pass them up here.
What are we gonna do about Boney?
Raleigh asked.
Nothing. He's dead, Pilot said. He's out of here. No point in doing anything.
It seems like nothing, Pilot said. Dead gotta take care of themselves.
I was thinking some kind of words, Raleigh said.
Leave the thinking to me, Dickwad, Pilot said. Then he nodded. But yeah, that's a good idea. Words is good. I'll talk tonight.
That night they did almost half of the remaining cocaine, getting high with Boney, and Pilot said his words.
Boney was our friend. He was an outlaw. Y'all remember the time he got that .22 and went up Malibu Road shooting cats out the window of his car, and about 50 cops came, and how he didn't give a shit? He just turned around and did it again. Remember how he rolled that guy's antique Porsche down that boat ramp into the ocean? We were sitting up there laughing our asses off, and the guy was down there crying tears about his fucking Porsche, and so on.
They were up late that night and got up late the next morning, and the first thing Pilot saw when he climbed out of the new RV was an enormous fat man riding past in the back of a John Deere Gator. He was shirtless, with black rings painted around his tiny pink nipples, and was wearing a black, white, and red clown face, and was throwing bottles of Faygo to bystanders. Another clown was driving the cart. The Juggalos were coming in. The Juggalo gathering was on a rundown farm east of Hayward off Highway 77. Roughly the size of a football field, the site had until recently been used to grow alfalfa. At one end, Juggalos were unloading cardboard boxes full of firewood from a flatbed trailer to be used to construct a huge bonfire. At the other end, more Juggalos were setting up a stage for music groups. Between them, but closer to the fire, a carny crew was setting up a low-rent Ferris wheel beside the tilt-a-whirl. Designated parking areas were set up on both sides of the field, marked with red plastic tape stretched between poles, and rows of blue fiberglass porta-potties were set up on the far sides of both parking lots. Pilot and his disciples had set themselves apart in a circle at the far end of one of the parking areas, the end zone of the field, to the left and slightly behind the stage. Sky got to the campground at 10 o'clock. She'd ridden up with her friend Carl and two guys named Siggy and Ivan, both Russians. The Russians had been cool guys and had face paint that they were happy to pass around. Carl helped make up Sky's face as a sad clown, and she did his as a happy face, but when they got out of the car and collected their packs, Carl said, "We don't look like Juggalos. We look like travelers with clown faces." Sky nodded. "Let's see if we can find some guys and ditch the bags." "Get something to eat," Carl said. "You got money?" "Yeah, we're good." There were already a couple of hundred people at the gathering, with more coming in. A white TV truck rolled past them toward the stage, and a fat guy in a John Deere Gator went by and tossed them bottles of Faygo. Sky had never heard of it and gave hers to Carl as they made a quick loop around the field. As they walked, they passed through invisible clouds of marijuana smoke, like old autumn leaves being burned. Halfway around, they found a cluster of travelers sitting under a tree. Sky knew two of the women and trusted one of them, who was named Lucy, and who agreed to watch her pack while Sky scouted the field.
"Got a need for weed," Lucy said. "Got you covered," Sky said. "We'll spark up when I get back." "Then hurry back," Lucy said.
50 or 60 cars dotted the two parking areas, along with a few campers and RVs, but a cluster of vehicles that seemed to be parked together caught her eye, and she went that way. Not much was moving around the cluster. Freshly burned log remnants were still sputtering in a fire ring. She moved closer, trying to shelter behind groups of Juggalos and the random cars in the parking lot. She was 30 or 40 yards away, standing behind an aging Volkswagen van, when a woman staggered out of the RV. She was wearing cut-off jean shorts and nothing else, though she was carrying what looked like a T-shirt, and one of the nearby Juggalos yelled,
"Yay, tits!" and the woman laughed and gave him the finger, and a minute later wiggled the shirt over her head. Skye didn't know her, but she looked like a disciple. Skye edged closer as the woman went to one of the cars in the cluster, opened the door, and emerged with a pair of sunglasses, a pack of Marlboros, and a Zippo lighter. Skye called over.
"Hey, tell Pilot that Carly said hi."
The woman finished lighting a cigarette, blew smoke, and called back.
"I think he's still asleep."
"I'll talk to him later," Skye called. She waved and walked away. Back with the travelers, she recovered her pack, took out the Gerber survival knife, and slipped it into the leg pocket on her cargo pants. Across the field, another carnival ride was pulling in. She'd lie around with her friends, Skye thought, until dark. Then she'd spot Pilot, and she'd stick him. She had no qualms about it. Thought about Letty and her feelings about killing. Ridding the world of Pilot was a public service, Skye thought, and would probably save a lot of lives. Still, the cops would call it murder, and if she went to prison, there'd be no more traveling. She could feel the tension growing in her gut and let it build, not trying to deny it. She was talking to Lucy, passing a joint back and forth, watching more and more juggalos pulling in, when she spotted Letty.
"Gotta go,"
she said, getting to her feet. "Gotta run." Lucas's cabin was less than 20 miles from the juggalo campground, and Letty knew the route well. She'd started north an hour or so behind Skye and closed the gap on the way up, arriving 45 minutes after Skye had. When she pulled the Benz into the campground, she gave a guy standing next to a barrel $5 to park, got a date-stamp ticket, put it on the dashboard, and said, "Thanks," when the guy said, "Nice ride." When she'd parked and got out, a tough-looking bare-faced guy in work clothes, who was probably a cop, walked by and muttered, "Not a place for college girls." Letty winced. The ticket seller and the cop, if he was a cop, had picked her out in seconds. She made a quick circuit of the field looking for Skye, then drove back to Hayward, found a yoga place, bought a pair of black yoga tights and a bright red crop top and black jacket, went over to the Walmart for a pair of high-top hunting boots and cotton socks. She changed out of her Neiman Marcus jeans, blouse, and wedge sandals in the car into the new stuff. Drove back to the campground, reparked, got out, and decided she more or less fit, except for her hairdo and bare face. When she walked onto the field, where the crowd was still a little sparse, a short, thin, balding man with a box said,
"You need a face. I'll paint your face for free if you show your tits."
Letty grabbed the front of his shirt and said,
"You'll paint my face for free or I'll beat the shit out of you."
"Violence.
That's so hot," the guy said. "Gives me a little woody."
"Little" being the key word, Letty said.
"Now, you gonna paint or get beat up?"
"Can we do both?" he asked.
Despite the paint, a dog face with a droopy red tongue, Skye picked Letty out instantly. Had nothing to do with the way Letty dressed or the face paint. Had something to do with the way she walked, like she owned the place. She said to Lucy,
"Watch my bag again, okay? You see that girl over there? The one with the red nose and the black tights? I gotta stay away from her. She's gonna come here, and she'll see my pack. Tell her that I went to Hayward with a friend."
"Whatever,"
Lucy said, in a voice that sounded like a gravel road.
"Give me a last good hit."
"Finish it," Skye said, passing the joint. "Tell her I won't be back until after dark." Letty spotted the travelers, but nobody shaped like Skye. She went that way and asked for her, and Lucy said,
"She's gone off to that town, I can't remember it. She went off with Carl. They're not coming back until night."
"Hayward? She went to Hayward?"
"Who?"
Lucy was confused.
Man, that shit just crawled right over me.
Sky. Sky went to Hayward?
Who?
Letty knew that Sky would be back, because she'd left her pack and all her gear with her friend. It was a matter of waiting, but the waiting nearly drove her to distraction. Nothing to do. Even the juggalos seemed uninteresting after she had seen a few dozen of them. A really bad rap band got going on the stage, and a guy ran past wearing nothing but a jockstrap. She began to feel stupid in the face paint. The hours crawled by until dinner time. She got 2 hot dogs with lots of onions. Then weather called.
I don't want to pry, but are you in Hayward?
Not exactly, Letty said. She heard her mother turn and tell Lucas.
She says, not exactly.
Lucas said, God damn it, she is. That juggalo thing is east of town. That's why it's not exactly. Weather asked.
At this juggalo thing, right? Looking for Sky?
Maybe, Letty said. Weather said.
Your father is seriously annoyed.
I believe it, Letty said. Not for the first time, though. He'll get over it.
Yeah, well, he just went steaming out of here. I think he'll be telling you how annoyed he is, personally, in about 2 hours.
He doesn't have to...
He thinks he does, Weather said.
When Letty got off the phone, something in her spine relaxed. Lucas was on the way up. That was a good thing. A juggalo went by, looking for volunteers.
We're putting up the fire and we need somebody to help. Could you help?
She was doing nothing else, so she went to help. The juggalos were building a fire stack out of cardboard boxes stuffed with stove-length pine logs. From the fire site, Letty could keep an eye on the travelers and Skye's backpack. Lucas was both furious and frightened. Letty thought she was tougher than she actually was, and she didn't know enough about crazy. He changed clothes, got his gun, climbed into the Porsche, and took off. He drove the route so many times during the year that he could almost do it with his eyes closed. He stopped once to pee and stuff the footwell cooler with Diet Cokes, and flew on into the evening. Sky got back to the campground just after dark, looking for Letty. Didn't see her in the milling mass of bodies. When she had left that morning, there might have been dozens of people. Now there were hundreds, and at the far end of the field, a moderately good rap group was performing, the music pounding over the heads of the crowd. The organizers had strung long lines of Christmas lights down the length of the field on both sides. A dozen campfires were going on the edges of the field, and the smell of roasting meat mixed with the odor of marijuana. Lucy was lying on her sleeping bag, staring at the stars. Sky crouched next to her and asked,
"That chick show up, Letty?"
"Who?" "Oh, yeah. Just for a minute."
At that moment, Letty walked up.
"Sky."
And Sky looked up and said,
"Ah, shit.
Letty,
what are you doing? Are you looking for Pilot?
And if you find him, then what?"
"I'll figure that out when I find him,"
Sky said. She didn't look toward Pilot's encampment. She squared off with Letty and added,
"Letty, I owe you. I appreciate your help, but you're not my mom."
"I know I'm not your mom, but if you try to go up against Pilot and those guys who had you..."
"I mean, Sky, that's crazy," Letty said. "You can't do that. You'll get hurt."
"My dad's coming up here.
If you can spot Pilot, he'll bring in the cops."
"Yeah, yeah. And then what'll happen? There'll be some kind of bullshit legal stuff, and Pilot will blame everybody else and he'll walk. You watch, you'll see. He's the devil."
"He's just an asshole," Letty began. "My dad's handled a lot worse than him."
"There is no worse than him," Sky said. "That's what nobody gets."
She turned and looked out at the growing crowd and then asked,
"You bring your car? Could you lock up my pack?"
"Yeah, sure. I'm just down the field."
Sky picked up her pack and said,
Thanks to Lucy and to Letty. Let's go. This stuff is too good to get ripped off.
They dropped the pack at the car, and Letty asked, So you'll wait for Dad?
Skye shrugged. Might as well. What are they doing over there? Building a teepee?
Fire stack. They're going to torch it off at midnight, Letty said.
Geez, you'll be able to see that from outer space, Skye said.
Not done yet. Once they get it built up to the point, they start another ring of boxes and build that up. They got a lot of boxes left. I was over helping to build it.
Then let's go help, at least until your dad gets here.
They worked stacking fireboxes for 10 minutes, then Letty turned away, caught up in the construction, and when she turned back, Skye was gone. She looked around, like a mother for a lost child, then stepped outside the ring of workers, still didn't see her. Stepped farther outside and looked down the field and caught a flash of Skye's face 40 yards away looking back at her. Their eyes touched, then Skye juked and disappeared into the crowd.
God damn it, Letty jogged after her.
When she got to where Skye had been, she couldn't see her. She wandered through the crowd, turning, but the lights, the painted faces, were like something out of a nightmare. The juggalos were dancing to the rap music now, long chains of them. The disciples had built a fire in the middle of their camp circle. They were all sitting around or lying around, talking, smoking, but nobody was singing Kumbaya. Most of them were wearing clown faces, including Pilot. Lane had painted a half dozen faces on him, wiping them away and redoing the work until he was satisfied. The white paint was fluorescent, and she'd outlined his face with it and put a dab on the tip of his nose. He was wearing a Catholic priest's black clerical suit, including the white collar, which, he thought, made a proper juggalo statement. Raleigh, Bell, and Chet were also in costume and were moving the last of the cocaine. They had already figured out that there wasn't much around, and they stepped on it again with dry baby formula and still got premium prices. They wouldn't get rich, but they'd have enough cash to get back to L.A. Skye saw a priest with a clown face but didn't recognize him as Pilot because of the costume and face paint. She stood in a clump of trees behind the circle of cars in the dark, waiting for him, handling the knife calm, quiet as a hunting cat, thinking about Henry, about Henry's baby face and how he'd always go off somewhere to pee so Skye couldn't see him, even though they'd been together for months. At 8, a decent rap band broke out on the stage and the crowd got tighter. Several people in Pilot's campground moved out toward the stage, and the new band set off a series of powerful strobes that flashed red, white, and blue at the crowd. From her stand in the clump of trees, Skye saw the clown-faced priest amble off toward the bonfire structure. She fumbled a joint out of her breast pocket, lit it, and with most of the disciples gone, she went looking for Pilot, moving into the circle where 3 remaining disciples were sprawled on blankets. She said,
Dudes, one of them said, what you got there? This shit from Oregon.
She lifted her chin and blew a smoke ring.
Pass it,
asked one of the disciples, a woman in a phosphorescent green Hulk mask. Skye passed it, and the woman took a hit and handed it down to one of the guys on the ground. They were standing behind the fire ring, and Skye asked,
Anybody seen Pilot?
Think he's out at the show, said one of the men. Nah, he went down to the fire thing, said the other man.
The woman pointed down to the end of the field and said,
That's Pilot. You can see him. The guy in the dark suit. He's dressed like a priest.
Skye turned to look, and the woman stooped and picked up one of the logs next to the fire ring and hit Skye in the back of the head. Skye dropped as though she'd been hit by an axe, and the woman said,
Come on, we gotta hide her.
She stooped and got Skye by the wrists and started dragging her between a car and the RV.
What the fuck are you doing? A man asked. He was on his hands and knees, looking out at the gathering grounds. There are people all over the place. He looked at Sky and said, Shit, she looks like she's dead.
Not yet, the woman said. This is that Sky chick. She didn't recognize me, but I recognized her and her voice. She was looking for Pilot. I bet she's got a gun.
Sky was on her side, her breathing rough, bubbly. The woman patted her down, found the REI knife in her leg pocket.
Gonna cut him, she said. Gonna kill him. Ray, go get Pilot.
Ray got unsteadily to his feet, but started down toward the bonfire, found some momentum, and went off at a trot. The woman said to the other man,
Let's get her over in those trees across the road. Pick her up, put your arms under her armpits like she's drunk and you're trying to help her out.
Jesus, she's hurt bad, the guy said.
Sky's head swung around, loose.
Not as bad as she's gonna be if I know Pilot, the woman said.
She looked out at the field.
Nobody's watching. Let's go.
Letty was at the back of the music crowd, 25 yards from the stage, turning, looking for Sky. A priest in a clown face went by, and a moment later somebody called,
Pilot! Pilot!
Pilot turned, stepped around Letty, and called back,
What? Gotta come back, man!
He poked his thumb back over his shoulder, back toward the ring of cars.
What? Just, you gotta come, man, like right now!
Pilot could see he didn't want to say why, but could feel the urgency in his voice. He nodded and started after him. So did Letty. She let them get 20 yards ahead, then took out her cell phone, called Lucas, and asked,
Where are you?
I'm half an hour out. Where are you?
I'm at the gathering. I found Pilot.
What? Get the fuck away from there. Letty,
he doesn't know I found him.
Letty said.
I heard somebody call him that. I mean, how many can there be?
Stay away from him.
I'm coming.
I called Stern. He's talking to the sheriff up there about getting some people together. We're hooking up in Hayward. We're coming out in a convoy. You see any cops there now?
I saw a guy who I thought was a cop, but there aren't any uniforms or squad cars around. I could look for that guy.
She was on her tiptoes, trying to follow Pilot as he pushed through the swirling crowd.
If you find a cop, it'll probably be a sheriff's deputy. Tell him we're coming. He'll have a radio. Have him get in touch with the sheriff. And stay the hell away from those people.
Letty rang off. Pilot and the man who'd come for him were now 30 or 40 yards away and headed behind the stage, and she jogged in that direction. Somebody yelled,
Show your tits!
But not at her, though it was about the 200th time she had heard it that day, and from the round of applause she suspected that whoever yelled had gotten his wish. She lost track of Pilot and the second man in the scrum around the stage, where the rap was getting better and hotter. The enormous fat man in the John Deere went by again, wearing a shirt now, still passing out bottles of Faygo. Somebody ran past and shouted,
Fart lighting contest! Follow me!
Letty stayed on track. The urgency of the man's call to Pilot suggested that they'd go wherever they were going in a straight line. From one of the parking lots, looking over the hoods of parked cars, she saw them again at the far end of the parking area. The priest and 5 or 6 other people were walking past a circle of cars into a stand of trees. There was some light from the stage and various other sources, including headlights of cars coming and going, but the strobes broke everything up, and she couldn't get close enough to see what Pilot and the disciples were actually doing until they seemed to break into an odd dance. She muttered to herself, What the heck? And edged closer, but worried about breaking out of the parking lot. The dancing stopped, and they drifted out of the trees back toward their cars, where they stood around talking. Letty watched for another 5 minutes. Then, afraid they could spot her if she stood in one spot too long, she faded back into the cars and looked around for a cop or a cop car. She didn't see one immediately. Where was Sky? Had she found Pilot? Did they have her? Her phone rang, and she looked at the screen. Lucas.
Yeah, Dad?
Where are you?
In a parking area. When you come into the field, I'm in the parking area that's to the left of the entrance.
Are you leaving? Are you getting out?
Not yet. I think Sky was looking for Pilot. I don't know if she found him, but I can't find her.
Don't look. Don't look. Get out of there.
Okay, I'm backing off. When you come in, Pilot's in a circle of cars at the far end of the field, off to the left of the stage and a little behind it. I can't see him now. I'm too far away.
Get out of there.
Had Sky gone back to the other travelers? It was possible, Letty thought. And they were directly across the field from where she was. She looked back toward the circle of cars. Pilot's people were talking, Pilot was gesturing, and a fire was burning hot in the middle of the circle. Looked like they'd be there for a while. Even if they broke up and moved into the crowd, she'd seen only one person with a priest costume, so finding him again shouldn't be too hard. She looked toward the spot where the juggalos had been and decided she had time to run across the field. She did that, jogging past a group of people with a circular blanket. They were using it to throw a half-naked woman up in the air, the woman laughing, kicking, and screaming as she went up. There were only two travelers where Sky's friends had been. No sign of Sky. Lucy was there.
"Where's Sky? Did she come back?" Letty asked.
The girl shook her head.
"Didn't see her after you guys left."
Letty turned and looked back toward the circle of cars. She couldn't see it from where she was, thought about it for a moment, jogged back that way, detoured around the growing crowd at the stage, pushed past a couple of drunks, one of whom grabbed her ass. She slapped him away and kept going, out to the side of the crowd and then back toward the circle of cars. The priest was there, pointing his finger at his various disciples, snapping out orders. The disciples were scrambling around, dragging stuff into cars and the RV, getting ready to move, fire still going hard. Letty pushed past the last of the dancing juggalos, not so much dancing, she thought, as bouncing up and down in place, and walked up to Pilot, who saw her coming, tipped his painted face toward her.
"Where's Sky?" Letty asked.
"What?"
"I saw her coming over here."
He was so fast. She never saw the fist coming, and it hit her like a meteor, below her right eye, to the right of her nose. She went down, dazed, and Pilot kicked her in the ribs, and she felt a knife-like pain, and he tried to kick her again, but she managed to push away and caught the blow on her arm and rolled and tried to get up, but he kicked her again, and she couldn't see very well, and then somebody screamed,
"Hey, hey, hey, quit that shit, quit that shit!"
Pilot shouted, "She tried to stick me with a knife." And the other person shouted, "Quit that shit, quit that shit." Pilot shouted back, "Fuck it, get the fuck out of here." He picked up one of the fire logs and waved it in the face of the fat juggalo in the John Deere, who threw a bottle of Faygo at Pilot's face and at the same time screamed, "Help a juggalo!" A group of juggalos turned and broke off from the dance crowd and started toward them, and Pilot went away. Letty was on her hands and knees, the pain rippling up her side, and she thought that maybe Pilot had hit her harder than she thought, but she got to her knees. The rap music was so loud she could barely hear anything, but she did hear the fat man shout, "Get in here!" And he pulled her into the back of the John Deere and shouted, "Roll it!" to the driver, and they rolled away down the field, and Letty shouted, "Wait, wait!" The fat man shouted to the driver, "Keep going!" and took her to the middle of the field where the crowd was thinnest, and told the driver to stop and said,
"Babe, you got a bloody nose. Your nose is really..."
Then he turned to the driver and said, "Dave, we gotta get her to the med tent."
They started driving again, and after a dozen bumps that sent pain screaming up Letty's ribcage, they got to a med tent where a juggalo in full makeup, but with a finger-wide red cross on his forehead, said,
"That's gotta hurt. Let me get you a gauze pad."
He pressed the pad to Letty's nose, and he said,
"Might help to tilt your head back."
And she did that and said, "I gotta go back there."
"That's not the brightest idea I've heard tonight," the fat man said.
"They might have hurt a friend of mine," Letty said.
The fat man wouldn't move until she'd thrown away the first gauze pad, now soaked with blood, and the medic had given her another.
"Should stop now," the medic said. "Where else did you get hit?"
"Kicked me in the side."
The medic asked her to lift her arms above